I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, April the 19th. And we wonder, will you be listening to U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez testify today before the Senate Judiciary Committee? Well, you can. Starting at 8:30 this morning, we will be bringing you NPR's live coverage of his testimony, explaining his role and what happened regarding the dismissal of 8 U.S. attorneys for what some believe were inappropriate political reasons, not reasons of performance or justice, but perhaps because those attorneys were not towing the Bush administration's agenda or priorities aggressively enough. Do you care about this? Do you care whether or not the Attorney General and perhaps with the involvement in the White House dismissed these 8 U.S. attorneys? We'll talk about it. We'll wonder what questions you have about the controversy, whether you think this is significant or not, or just politics, partisan politics. We welcome your calls. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dennis Riley. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Let's get a short history course or civics lesson first. All U.S. attorneys are appointed by the president and serve at the discretion or pleasure of the president?
Sure. They're nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate. Mm-hmm. Under normal circumstances, there are emergency opportunities for the president to put someone in place without Senate confirmation for a period of time. But basically, it's the president and the Senate. And under the normal way of doing business, there's a great deal of consultation between the president's people and the senators from the state in which this U.S. attorney would serve.
Yeah. It's not uncommon for a new president to clean house and maybe replace all 90-some of these attorneys like we hear so much President Clinton did?
It's almost automatic, particularly, of course, if there's a change in parties when one moves in and the other moves out, that almost everyone will be asked to resign. There may be one or two holdovers for brief periods because they have certain kinds of cases going that just the continuity is critical. But otherwise, they're all going to be told to go, and they'll go, and they expect that when their party loses the election, because these are pretty highly politicized appointments.
So when President Bush first took office in 2000, we presume he replaced most of the existing U.S. attorneys then?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and the 8 that we're talking about now were his appointees.
Yes.
Yeah. So what happened? I mean, why is this being looked at as being so unusual?
Well, it is unusual in the sense that, generally speaking, presidents don't get rid of 10% of their own U.S. attorneys in a single day, just say all of you are out. That's pretty unusual because presidents, while these are highly politicized appointments, generally speaking, presidents then back off a little bit once the individual has been chosen for partisan loyalty and for other kinds of reasons at the beginning. But then the president has to back off a little bit because this is, after all, a prosecutor. Prosecutor has to appear to be above partisan politics and probably should even be as much above it as is possible for such highly politicized people. So there's a sort of ambiguous relationship between the president and the U.S. attorneys once the U.S. attorneys are appointed and confirmed.
Yeah. So whatever, was it after the fall elections? Is that when the people started thinking that these 8 attorneys weren't doing something right? And what's the timeline here as to when these 8 attorneys were on the chopping block?
Well, that's going to be one of the questions that's going to be asked today of the Attorney General. How far back does this timeline go? There's been some talk that it goes all the way back to not long after the president's reelection, thoughts about having all kinds of people resign from those positions, and then, maybe that's not politically viable. And so there may be as far back as 2005 when initial discussions were going on. And I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly, but that spreadsheet mm-hmm. that had all the, you know, are you in the Federalist Society? You know, are you a good, loyal Bush supporter? Are you this? Are you that? That whole set of questions that were asked as they were ranking people, that I think goes back to 2005 as well. So we're really talking about something that many people think has been brewing for quite a while. And I just heard Dana Perino say that, you know, a lot of these things, they go back two and a half years. You can't expect the Attorney General's memory to be, you know, perfect on all of these things. So it's it goes back quite a ways.
Yeah. Well, we will continue talking with Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, as we preview Alberto Gonzalez's testimony today before the Senate Judiciary Committee, talking about whether those U.S. attorneys were fired unfairly because of politics, and we'll talk some about what role, if any, the Bush administration may have played in this. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We will be carrying that testimony starting at 8:30 this morning. National Public Radio's coverage of the hearing starts at 8:30. It should go for much of the day. There is going to be a lunch break. Kathleen Dunn and a guest analyst will be standing by to cover that lunch break and to hear from you, get your questions and reactions. And then Ben Marin's at the conclusion of the hearings, which could be, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. It's unclear exactly when they'll end. Ben will have a guest analyst to talk with you as well. And we welcome your calls and questions for our guest during this hour. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez will testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. He will be the only witness as the senators probe the dismissal of eight U.S. attorneys for what some wonder were inappropriate political reasons. This appearance by Alberto Gonzalez, many are saying, will make or break his future as Attorney General. He did release his opening remarks over the weekend, I believe, and he said that missteps were made in this process, that he was less than clear in his explanations of his role in this process, but that there were no improper motives and that no one was fired or dismissed for inappropriate political reasons. What do you think of his opening remarks, Professor Riley, that missteps were made, he was less than clear, but no one was fired for inappropriate reasons?
Yeah, his opening statement isn't going to convince anyone of anything, so that's just going to be the bidding, you know, so that's how we start the bidding. But I think they will ask him some questions based on that, but they have much more specific questions in mind. All he really apologized for is the attorneys were treated badly after they were fired. You know, they should have gotten notice, and it should have been done a little differently, and, gee, that's too bad. But none of us did anything that was really wrong, and none of us did anything with any evil intent. Therefore, we're okay people, and everything went fine, and all the reasons are okay. And I don't think that Patrick Leahy in particular or Chuck Schumer are going to be terribly satisfied with the opening statement. So that's going to be dismissed fairly quickly.
Yeah. Well, we'll go into some of those much more specific questions that you anticipate will be asked. But we have a couple of callers, and we also have an open line if you would like to join in. What are you listening for or looking for with these hearings today? Are you even going to be following this testimony? Are you concerned about this story? Do you think it's significant? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. David in Fort Atkinson joins us first. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Am I going to be listening to it? I kind of doubt it. First of all, I'm going to be at work, although I can stream WPR, and I probably might listen to some of it. But am I interested in it? Not really. I'm not really interested in it because I think this is just, it's more typical partisan witch hunting that every party, you know, the Republicans engage in it, the Democrats engage in it. The way I look at it is this. The U.S. attorneys serve at the will and pleasure of the president. It's at-will employment. And the president, being the supreme executive and chief law enforcement officer in the country, that title belongs to him, not the attorney general, he's the one who's charged constitutionally with enforcing the laws. And to decide that certain attorneys are not pursuing the kind of agenda that you want to pursue, that's, in my mind, that's perfectly fine as long as the agenda that you want them to pursue is not one of covering up, as Richard Nixon did. Now, as I understand it, now, please have your guest either confirm or correct my understanding. When a new president comes into office, most, if not all, of the U.S. attorneys tender a resignation, and then the president decides which ones he wants to keep. I think what President Bush did is he just said, just let them all stay and we'll handle it as we go forward. I think what President Clinton did, if I remember correctly, is he accepted the resignations of all of them and then reappointed. So what President Clinton did is he got the political stuff out of the way up front. President Bush didn't, and that's why it's coming back to bite him. But because these guys serve at the will of the president, I don't think the Congress should have any interest in this other than to ensure that no laws were broken in dismissing these guys.
Yeah, we did talk about this, David, just to begin with. But what about again the serving at the will of the president and the process? David says he understands. Maybe Bush just said, "Well, let's see how it goes," and that's when these eight came on the chopping block later when they weren't performing up to snuff.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite accurate in this sense. If you go back to 2001, the beginning of the first Bush term, the U.S. attorneys were replaced. No Republican president is expected to leave a set of U.S. attorneys appointed by a Democratic president in place. No one assumes that will happen, and it didn't happen. What we're talking about here is a fairly substantial removal, about 10% of the U.S. attorneys. Not quite. Would have taken one more. But about, you know, 8 out of 93 are replaced in almost the midpoint of a second term. That's a pretty unusual thing. It's not unusual for there to be turnover. These people resign to run for public office, or they resign to make more money as attorneys or whatever. They leave. But to be forced out this many in the middle of a second term is an unusual thing. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means it's unusual, and anything unusual is going to be brought up. And the Democrats now are the majority party, and there is some partisan basis to this. There's no question about that. The two parties don't like each other very much. The Bush administration has been perceived by Patrick Leahy and others in the Democratic Party as arrogant and as unresponsive, and this is now their opportunity to point that out. And so they're going to bring in the attorney general, and they're going to grill him, and they're going to try to find out if any laws were broken, but also just if the conventions and customs of American politics were broken. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, there's no law there, but there's longstanding tradition, and how far did they go?
Yeah. Besides the politics, though, aren't the Democrats pointing to some, I don't know, higher a goal here, that they're concerned that this is turning law enforcement into something that's less than impartial?
That's what they're going to claim, I'm sure, that this reached the point in the case, say, in New Mexico, and possibly the San Diego case, Ms. Lamb, that those two might indeed have involved specific prosecutions that did or did not go forward, and the frustration of political people in the White House and elsewhere that they did or did not go forward. And at that point, now you're starting to tread on territory that presidents probably shouldn't tread on.
Yeah. David, thanks very much. Do you think, David said that he wasn't going to necessarily be following this. He's not all that interested in it because he says it's just a political witch hunt. But is this something that's on anybody's radar screen besides political junkies, Dennis Riley?
I'm really not sure. My hunch is that it's probably not very high up in the priorities of many people. And, of course, the events earlier this week just sucked the oxygen out of so many people, and it's hard for them to think of this as really important, that they should concentrate on it when, you know, the news of the Virginia Tech tragedy, mm-hmm. and then yesterday almost 200 Iraqis blown up in their own capital. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are just, they don't know if this is something they really need to focus on. And there is a reasonable, you know, part of David's case is reasonable. That, you know, the president can get rid of these people, and he can do it for political reasons if he wants to. There are just certain kinds of political reasons he shouldn't tread on. It shouldn't interfere with the prosecution. It shouldn't violate any of those laws and traditions. And did it? Well, that's a matter of opinion, probably. So it really is something that people are, I'm not sure they really fully understand.
Yeah. But when we hear, I don't know, reasons like an attorney's not prosecuting enough Democrats or going after aggressively enough after voter fraud issues, it then seems as though that justice is becoming even more politicized than it should be.
It does. Mm-hmm. It feels that way to a lot of us, and I'm sure mm-hmm. it doesn't to some others. And I don't think that the Attorney General certainly is not going to concede that the fact that Ms. Lamb, the U.S. Attorney for San Diego, successfully prosecuted Duke Cunningham and then was closing in on some other folks, he's not going to admit that had anything to do with her being removed from office. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's never going to be admitted. Nor are they going to fully admit that that's how Iglesias lost his job, was from pressure from a Republican senator from New Mexico. But the Senate is now going to, they're starting the preliminary part of investigating whether or not Senator Domenici stepped across Senate ethics lines, at least, and possibly across legal lines in putting pressure on the White House to get rid of that guy.
Yeah, I'm also going to talk with you a little bit about the possible Wisconsin connection mm-hmm. to this whole thing after the news. But let me bring on Linda in Monroe, who's been waiting. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor Riley.
Hi.
I will be listening. I believe President Bush's attorney general should be fired for a number of reasons, because a lot of them sound like they could be lies that he told. One of them being that he didn't remember anything about the attorney firings, and a lot of the emails were missing. There were enough of them that made him, as well as Karl Rove, look guilty. And according to a Newsweek article of March 26, 2007, when President Bush was governor and Mr. Gonzales was his attorney, he got him off a jury duty so Mr. Bush wouldn't have to disclose a drunk driving case on his record from 1976. Now, I think this administration has been so secretive and deceptive that I think it's time we got some sunshine in there.
Yeah. We just have a minute for a brief response to Linda's comments, Professor Riley.
Well, a couple of things certainly are worth noting. As soon as the name Karl Rove comes up in any conversation, Democratic mm-hmm. ears perk up. So part of this is a chance to try to take a shot or two at him. But also there's questions about the Attorney General's basic competence to run the department. If he didn't know about these firings and he wasn't involved in them, what does that say about his engagement with his own department? There's only 93 U.S. attorneys, and they do work in some sense for the mm-hmm. Justice Department. And he wasn't aware of all this. He wasn't involved in it in any way. Not much of a defense.
We'll talk more about whether Attorney General Alberto Gonzales is doing a heck of a job or not as we return from NPR News, talking with Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, previewing the Alberto Gonzales testimony today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Thursday, April the 19th. And in about an hour, we will go to National Public Radio's live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing that's investigating the dismissal of 8 U.S. attorneys for what some wonder were inappropriate political reasons. Were the U.S. attorneys fired because they were not advancing the Republican agenda, not being loyal enough to President Bush? Alberto Gonzales, the attorney general, will testify before the committee today. He's the only witness. A lot of people say that this is a make-or-break appearance for his future as attorney general. And we are previewing the hearings and what's at stake here with Dennis Riley, a professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. And we welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Professor Riley, before we go back to the phones, just before news time, we heard from a caller who did bring up Karl Rove. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked yet about the brouhaha over a bunch of emails that were related to this issue that were mysteriously deleted, and a lot of people are wondering if Karl Rove deleted them. Can you tell us about this?
Well, a little bit, anyway. Mm-hmm. What happened, there's two different email systems that Karl Rove and others in the White House were using. Not everyone by any means, but somewhere I think around 50 different people in the White House had separate email accounts, separate laptop computers supplied by the Republican National Committee. And the idea was, well, you use these when you're doing, quote, political work, and use your government issue when you're doing, quote, government work. And as if those could really be separated, but they were going to try to. And there's something called the Presidential Records Act, passed after Richard Nixon, that requires that all kinds of stuff be kept, archived, and available, even though it may not be available at all times. And the RNC issued, Republican National Committee issued computers. Are they covered by that, or aren't they covered by that? Well, nobody's exactly sure. And then apparently a good many of those emails, Karl Rove did indeed delete, as much as one can actually delete an email. For 3 or 4 years until finally the Republican National Committee said, well, you know, maybe we'd better hang on to these just in case something happens later on. And now the latest thing I read was that the Republican National Committee has been instructed by the White House Counsel's Office not to turn anything over to the Congress. So that could get very interesting.
Hmm. Is Alberto Gonzalez, is this a make-or-break appearance before this committee today?
Oh, probably in some sense. I mean, it's being read that way by so many people that it'll be hard to prevent that from becoming the storyline for it anyway. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to win over Schumer and Leahy and other Democrats or even some of the critical Republicans. He's going to be able to convince them that it wouldn't be better for the Justice Department to be under new leadership, somebody who would take charge in an entirely different way. And hopefully, I think from their point of view, somebody less tied to the president. We've often had attorneys general who were tied to the president. I mean, Bobby and Jack were brothers. But it looks kind of funny when it's somebody that's too close to the president. Can that person be a neutral law enforcement officer, a neutral manager of the Justice Department? Justice is not like any other department because of its law enforcement responsibilities. So, you know, it's not like the State Department or the Defense Department, which really is supposed to follow the president's stamp. Justice is also supposed to follow the law wherever it leads them, even if it leads them to impeaching the president, you know, to convincing Congress to impeach or anything it could do. So you really have to think of it in different terms, and I think for many of these senators, they don't think that can happen again until Gonzalez is out and a more neutral person put in place.
To the phones again, Royce and Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. What I was curious about, one of the things that was in the Patriot Act was something that basically would not require Senate confirmation for replacement U.S. attorneys, and I was very concerned about that because that removes the check, and I was wondering what the status of that is.
Do you know, Professor Rowe?
The status of it is it's going to die very shortly. That is, the Justice Department has dropped its opposition to taking that out of the law, and an amendment to the law will be passed before long that will then delete that provision. So that's gone.
Yeah. What sorts of questions are you anticipating? What sorts of tough questions will Gonzalez face today?
Well, certainly there are going to be people asking him to resolve the inconsistencies in his previous testimony and the inconsistencies between his testimony and the testimony of Kyle Sampson. So there'll be some of that, you know.
And that being that Kyle Sampson said that Gonzalez was very involved
right,
in all of this.
He was much more involved than he would indicate. There'll be, you know, that sort of, well, on this date, on this date, on this date, now can you make these make any sense together? There'll be a lot of that. But one of the things that's been said several times now is that there will be, they're going to go one firing at a time and say, why this person? And that's going to open up the question. Remember his first kind of offhand remark, they were all fired for performance reasons, is probably what really triggered this whole thing, because all eight of them then had to fight back. I mean, you can't have your former boss say, well, I got rid of him or her because just no good, you know, just wasn't getting the job done. Nobody like that's going to hold still for that. So then it began to unravel. Mm-hmm. And once that was said, it began to unravel on him. And so now he's going to have to say, either he's going to have to say, no, performance really didn't have anything to do with it, in which case then the follow-up question is, well, what did? Or he's going to have to try to find something wrong with the performance of each of these people, and that opens the line of questioning about immigration cases and voter fraud cases and that whole area. So he's in for a rough ride over each of these. And from what I understand, bringing it very close to home, that there's going to be some serious questioning about the prosecution of Georgia Thompson.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Do you think maybe Senators Feingold or Cole might bring this up as to whether there was political pressure put on Stephen Biskupic, the federal prosecutor in Milwaukee?
Oh, I'm sure there will. I'm sure one or the other of them is going to question about it, maybe both. Because it's natural that they would, given that they're Democratic senators, and this was, you know, used against Doyle in his reelection campaign. But even without that, that is a serious question. When a prosecution, even a successful one, because he did get a conviction from the jury, we can't ignore that. A prosecution that's overturned by a court of appeals in a matter of minutes, and then someone is ordered released immediately, that's very unusual. So the evidence must have been pretty bad. Well, now with this, it never would have come up. But with all this context, Gonzalez is going to be asked if there's any evidence anywhere, and where are the emails about Biskupic, and what happened here and what happened there. Now, in Biskupic's defense, an awful lot of very good attorneys have said they don't think he was the kind of prosecutor that could have been pressured that way. They just believe he's a decent guy and a good prosecutor, and he just blew a case.
Yeah. But then we also heard recently that Biskupic, was on some list of the federal prosecutors that had their job in jeopardy for whatever reason. I think it was speculated that he wasn't aggressively or successfully pursuing enough voter fraud cases in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard that as well, and, you know, I have never actually seen that spreadsheet that had everybody laid out and their credentials and all that other stuff, but there has been some speculation that his head was close to the chopping block at some point along the way. And, the Republicans are very interested in pursuing voter fraud cases all across the country. And their interest is in individual voters that shouldn't be voting, as opposed to widespread fraud in the counting of votes or mistakes in the counting of votes. And so they're interested in one agenda, and the Democrats in a much different agenda in terms of the integrity of American elections.
We're going to check the weather, and then we will get to more calls. For Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, talking with us about the testimony today of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. He'll be before the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is investigating the firing of eight U.S. attorneys and whether there were improper political motives behind the firings. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'm going to be welcoming in the author of Blue Grit, True Democrats Take Back Politics from the Politicians. We'll talk with Laura Flanders for about a half an hour or so. We're going to be abbreviated in our 8 o'clock hour because at 8:30, we will bring you live coverage of National Public Radio's coverage of the testimony of Alberto Gonzalez before the Senate Judiciary Committee. The coverage starts at 8:30. It will last pretty much all day long. We'll hear Kathleen Dunn during a lunch break. We don't know exactly when that's going to happen. And Ben Marins after the testimony or the hearing concludes later this afternoon. Talking this hour with Dennis Riley, a professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. We're previewing the Gonzalez testimony and the issue at large and what's at stake. Susan in Madison is next. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Professor Riley mentioned that the two sets of computers and the portable computers owned by the Republican National Committee to do political work. In Wisconsin, you're not supposed to do any political work from your state offices. I think Chuck Koala got in big trouble for that, as well as a number of other people. Is that legal to do political work from the White House?
That's an interesting question. The White House is a little bit different than any other government building, so the rules are a little bit different. You're not supposed to use your government-issued property, so you have to, I suppose, stand away from your desk with the laptop or sit on the floor in a yoga position or something. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be using government resources to do political work. And since these folks work pretty much 16, 18-hour days, and they're not always in their offices, so they had the other computers, their laptops, they're portable. They can be, you know, they could go to a coffee shop if they were worried about the other side of it. So it's really trying to keep them away from using their government issued computers, their government issued cell phones. They also had separate cell phones for their political work as opposed to their government work, and so on. It's just that that can be a very artificial separation. Politics enters into all kinds of government decisions. And so, you know, how do you make that distinction in your own mind? They were worried about it, and they decided that the RNC-issued computers and cell phones would be a good way to make sure they kept them separate. But they couldn't keep them completely separate. That's pretty obvious. And now they've got record-keeping questions that are going to get them in some considerable trouble, I think.
Susan, thank you for the call. Angie in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank your station for covering the hearings. I think it's very, very important. I will be listening, and I love it that you're playing them. I'm especially interested in the explanation on the Biskupic charging and prosecution, not only on the Georgia Thompson, but I wonder if there's other charging decisions that were made, you know, because he was under pressure. And I'm hoping our senators will ask Mr. Gonzalez those questions as well. But thank you so much for airing the hearings. I think it's really important for all of us to hear that.
No, well, thank you very much, Angie. And I am curious if people are going to be listening and think that this is significant or just politics. Let me get your take once again on not necessarily our decision to carry the hearings, Professor Riley, but on the, I don't know, the significance of this testimony and this issue. Is it a significant issue to get to the bottom of?
Well, I think it is in this sense. I think that we've had an administration for the past 6 years that believes that politics really is, it's okay to let politics dominate all sorts of things. So it's all right for them to step in and do this because these people aren't performing up to the level they want them at. That the president can issue signing statements that negate pieces of legislation, you know, parts of legislation. That all sorts of things are okay. And they're not illegal, and they're not unconstitutional. Does that make them okay? And this is a way of sort of going into those same things. Yes, you can ask these people to resign. No one questions your legal authority to do that, your constitutional authority to do it. What we question is, I think some of the senators are going to be saying, what we question is the wisdom of having done it and the fragility of a lot of our understandings about American politics and about government and about where we try to pull partisan politics back out and let justice go on? All these sorts of things. The envelope's been pushed by this administration. At least that's what many people feel. And it's been pushed too far. So now this is a reaching back, taking back some of that territory of just informal understandings and norms and rules of the game.
And we don't carry every NPR news special or special coverage like this, but we did think that, especially with the possible Wisconsin connection to this quote-unquote scandal, that there would be interest in Wisconsin to what is said today and what is done today. Phil in Fort Atkinson, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I have a couple of questions that I'm curious about. In following this and in reading some of the documents, I noticed that membership in the Federalist Society, which is a secret organization, they do not make their membership available. Membership in the Federalist Society is a hiring criteria used by the Gonzales Department of Justice and the and his office. I also noticed that the judge here in Wisconsin who oversaw the prosecution, Judge Randa, is a member of the Federalist Society, and I've been given to believe that many members of the U.S. Attorney's staff in Milwaukee, Biskupic's staff, are also members of the Federalist Society. Does this raise any concerns among those who are examining this and academic concerns on your part?
Well, in a sense, no, because the Federalist Society is simply a bunch of extremely conservative Republican lawyers. I mean, there are almost no Democratic lawyers in it, and they are very conservative. Where they bother me is not so much that they want to exist and make these discussions. As they become powerful people, it's not just that they're very conservative. I think their view of the Constitution is very different from the one that ought to prevail. That's a personal opinion or a professional opinion or both, because they're very much executive branch-oriented people who believe that the president's powers are much less limited than I guess many of us believe they ought to be in a system based on notions of separation of powers and checks and balances. They're the people that consistently talk about the unitary executive, which means that the president really should be in charge of all aspects of the executive branch. And I don't know, that's a theory that not all of us subscribe to. So it's really an exceptionally conservative group, but I don't know if I see it as you know, the Freemasons coming back to threaten the government or something.
Thanks to Phil. Joe in La Crosse is next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. First, let me reiterate what a great idea to have this conversation, and really impressed with your guest's moderate sensibilities. But I got to say, I'm stunned. Stunned. I mean, the idea that an attorney general might be politically motivated and would perhaps even go to the point of lying. I mean, think back to exemplary attorney generals like Janet Reno. Oh, wait, she lied about Waco and the fact that they used explosive tear gas canisters, but they didn't tell anybody for 5 years. I mean, a stun. It's like finding out in college basketball that there are people involved in it just for the money and not for the academic educational benefits. It's just, where are we going next with this, you know? I mean, pretty soon we're going to find out that half of the government and the Justice Department is politically motivated, and that they go after people for political purposes and not for simply legal ones, and that, as your guest just pointed out, we prosecute voter fraud, but we prosecute the kind of voter fraud that makes it difficult for the left to get away with anything. But we don't. We wholesale let go the kind of voter fraud that makes it possible for the right to do something. Yeah. And it's very political. It's always political. And, yeah, maybe it does take a moment like this for people to notice it. And maybe it does take the fact that Gonzales is either oblivious, which is a bad plan for an attorney general, or is just outright lying, which is an equally bad plan for an attorney general.
We're shocked, Professor Riley.
Yeah, I know. I expect somebody to hand me my gambling winnings from the back any minute now. Yeah, we're not shocked. But in another sense, we'd like to think that this is, you know, a step over a line that we thought we had drawn, a little loosely perhaps, but we thought we had it drawn. Some people believe that it's a step across. Other people, of course, don't. They think it's business as usual, and that's perfectly okay. And others who think it's business as usual, and it's totally not okay. So I don't know. It still seems to me to be just one more step further than I'm used to.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Sean in Burlington, we are almost out of time, but what do you have to say?
Well, I think it's quite likely that a crime has been committed in the impeding of a federal investigation here. But my main comment is that I think that what this shows is a broader pattern with the Bush administration of putting the loyalty to the Republican Party above that loyalty to the country and the public and the Constitution, and in particular with George Bush and people like Gonzalez and Karen Hughes and Harriet Myers. It's almost like a cult of personality and extreme loyalty to him at all costs, and everybody else be damned, and ethics be damned.
Yeah, 30 seconds to wrap it up, Professor Riley.
There are a lot of people who feel that way and have felt that way for a while, and this is one of their few opportunities, I think, to really try to bring that out into the light. So there will be a lot of stuff aimed at Alberto Gonzalez with the hope that it bounces off him and hits Karl Rove or George Bush directly.
As always, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dennis Riley, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. The hearings, the coverage starts at 8:30 this morning here on the Ideas Network. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.